This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Rays Radio Network proudly presents This Week in Rays Baseball. Here's your host, Neil Solons.
Well, here we are. We certainly didn't think that we'd have an end of postseason podcast this early in October, but here we are indeed. It's disappointing. It's tough. I'm not quite sure I'm through all the stages or even half of them yet. It's very difficult, and I get it as a fan if it is. But from a content standpoint, we do move forward, and I thought it would be good for you, the fans, to hear from Rays President of Baseball Operations, Eric Neander, and we'll hear from him in a little bit, and then some analysis from Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times, and we'll kind of try to break down the whys and wherefores as to what happened in the series against the Boston Red Sox, and then be able to take it from that point forward and try and look ahead a little bit to 2022, because there are a lot of decisions that will have to be made, and a lot of moves that probably will be made too, and we'll get to all of that as we move forward on the podcast. But we'll start with President of Baseball Operations, Eric Neander, beginning with kind of how he feels about the early exit and also obviously a tremendous regular season too.
Yeah, probably in a way that might not make a whole lot of sense or words that contradict one another, but exceptionally proud, but also disappointed. Is the best way I'd place it. You know, this was a year where we went back to the winter of the spring, talked about it being a year of transition, certainly with our pitching staff, and we thought we would be competitive. I don't think we realistically envisioned, certainly with all the injuries we had, winning 100 games. And for those reasons, incredibly proud of this group and the staff. But those expectations, they continue to climb as we got deeper in the year. You know, each passing month, this looked more and more like a team that is arguably the best team in the American League, or position themselves that way, despite their youth and despite all that transition. And so, you know, that it provides great pride, and you know, you're really proud about all that transpired and led to that. But then comes the higher expectations and the quick exit in the postseason, and that's disappointing. And that's why we're talking here today and doing this now, rather than what we really had hoped and planned for being a few weeks from now.
Why do you think the exit happened? What didn't go right against Boston?
Well, probably, you know, just not having a whole lot of time to process. You know, between now and game four ending, we'll take a little more time. I think we played a good team that outplayed us, and you know, it starts there. I think there's, you know, 100 different directions my mind could go right now, or is going, as I attempt to give you a better answer. But you know, we had a hard time missing bats. They put a lot of balls in play. They had some big at bats, you know, with runners on. They had some big hits. We didn't find the big hit as much in games 2, 3, and 4, and certainly we found them to fight back at a tie games, but we couldn't figure out a way to get it done to get ahead before they did. But you know, look, this is a team we played a bunch this year. They beat us, we beat them. We had close games that we won, close games that we lost. You know, these things can happen, and we'll learn from it. We'll do all we can to think and overthink it and look at all the young players on our team and, you know, see what we can gain from it to do better moving forward. But sometimes these things can also just happen.
As great a regular season as it was, and as well as you did to replace or fill the gap for Tyler Glasnow, was this when you might have missed him most?
Yeah, I think, and to go back to your previous question, I got long-winded enough that I just shut it off. But I, you know, the starts, you know, Shane gave us a great start in game one. And after that, we didn't get the kind of outings that we had, you know, grown accustomed to getting from our young starters down the stretch. And so that put us in a bit of a bind. And, you know, certainly it helps to appreciate just how valuable it can be to have one guy that can go 5, 6, 7. Certainly the way Glass was going earlier this year, you know, to have someone like that, that's a difference maker in terms of, you know, what it does to the game or two games he pitches, and also the way it can set up your pitching for the rest of a series.
When you start to look forward, how much can this experience help 2022?
Yeah, well, no matter how this season ended, once we reach the postseason, if you step back from this October and you jump to the thoughts about what's ahead, it's really exciting. You know, this is, we won 100 games on the backs of a lot of young, inexperienced players. You know, Randy Arosa had the huge postseason. He's a little older. He's a rookie. You know, we had guys in our pen, rookies. And then you look at Drew Rasmussen coming on, Shane McClanahan, what he did all year long, Patino, you know, at age 21, Shane Boz, you know, what we saw out of him down the stretch, that, you know, you have the makings of what we just talked about, of having that Glass now, having those guys that can really carry workload. We've got some really, really promising young arms that did a wonderful job down the stretch here. We'll benefit greatly from these postseason experiences in those environments. There's no substitute for living those things and experiencing them. They have that now, and they have them at a very early stage of their career, which is important to us because we rely on young players to think about this group's potential moving forward, in addition to Wander and some of the players on the other side of the ball that are younger. It's exciting, you know, to think that this is a team that won 100 games, did it through periods of transition, accomplished it with endless run of injuries on the pitching side. It's a 100-win team that you could arguably say moving forward, you know, the arrow's pointing up on them.
You have often supplemented young guys with veterans. You didn't have, you know, a veteran like a Charlie Morton on the pitching side. You have brought in Nelson Cruz. For next year, do you need some sort of veteran, especially knowing Tyler may be out for the full year, for the pitching side?
I think it's always helpful to have experienced players in your clubhouse. Now, you know, those that are interested in giving back to others and sharing their experiences and helping to guide young players, that's a certain part of it. It's not for everyone. I don't mean that as a knock. You know, it's just, you know, some people go about their days and spend their time differently, you know. But it's something we always talk about. It's something we've always preached, the value of it, the importance of it. You know, Rich Hill, you know, provided a lot of that in the early going, and, you know, we had to make some difficult decisions in the middle of the year about which way to go on some things as we worked in some of our younger arms. But it's something that, you know, we are always going to rely on young players, but with that, you want to have staff and you want to have other players on hand. That peer-to-peer influence is huge. You want to have them on hand that can help these young players learn the way, learn the ropes, expedite their maturation process, because we do rely on young players and we need them to come along much sooner than most in many respects. And yeah, that's where guys like that are critical. And I think our recent history here shows that we're pretty big believers in that.
Nelson Cruz probably didn't perform as well as he wanted or you wanted, regular season or postseason, after acquiring him. But what do you think his impact will have been on the young players, Randy Rosarena, Wander Franco, Brandon Lau, etc.?
It's a lot back to the question that you just hit on. It's something that you can't measure it, but you can appreciate it. And numerous examples behind the scenes where Nelson lent his time, provided a suggestion, or just was being an example by the way he went about his day and how disciplined he was and how he took care of himself and how professional he was, that all of that, even in a few months' time, given his stature, his credibility, and the way he is perceived within the game, all justifiably so, you can leave a lasting impression on not just one or two people, but nearly an entire clubhouse. And it's safe to say that he did that. You know, this is someone that has been, you know, has had immense contributions to the game, has been at the top of his game for a very long time. And, you know, we have a lot of players in our clubhouse that would love nothing more than have the opportunity to play at age 41. And, he gives them a way to see that through and to make sure that they appreciate every day how it influences the next.
Toughest decisions going forward would be what? You've got a 19-player, I think, arbitration class, half a dozen or so free agents. You can't have a 50-man roster, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think there's the decisions of once we need to reinstate everyone from the IL. That's going to put us north of 40. That'll give us some immediate decisions to make once the season's over. Then you have the protection deadline and how the group of players that are Rule 5 eligible fit into this. And then, you know, you're throughout that, you're always determining your injured players, you know, potential free agents, trades, and those Rule 5s, how to, within that 40 group, of how to make sure you're assembling a group that can contribute to our 26-man roster opening day. That'll be a balance, a tricky one, perhaps a little trickier this year than normal because of all those injuries, because of the arbitration class, and because we've got some really good Rule 5 eligibles coming along. I wish we were still playing, but having a few additional weeks here to really sort through this and focus on it should do us some good and help us hopefully make better decisions in the fall.
You're going to have turnover on the 26-man and the 40-man roster. You've kept, by and large, at the head, you and Kevin, on the baseball ops side, and Carlos and Peter. Are you confident the coaching staff will all be able to stay in place? Or I know how often it is that teams like your guys.
Yeah, I mean, that's always a possibility. Our staff, they've done marvelous work, and with that comes well-deserved recognition. So we'll see all that through and see where it leads. Those are all decisions, and that process, that'll be something over the next week that we really dig into and spend more time on and just see what kind of interest might be out there from other clubs. Our focus has been almost solely on the 2021 season, the postseason at this point, in part because of the great work that our staff did.
And I guess pointing forward, focus is still find a way to be as good as you can to get the ring, right?
Yeah, we've got to keep getting into the playoffs. That's the first step, and I think the more years we can reach the postseason, the more, you know, our chances of winning a World Series increase, and we're going to stay at it. Like I said, we feel like we have a 100-win team here with a nucleus that I think is pointing up, and that's exciting, and should allow us the opportunities, if things go our way, to have more postseason trips in our near-term future here, and we need those trips to have a chance to finally break through one day, and believe that we're gonna do that, and believe it'll be that much sweeter when we do because of some of the disappointments and things we've experienced, certainly in 2021.
Sad to see it end, but certainly appreciate the time. Good luck as you get ready for 22.
Thanks, Neil. I appreciate it, and we'll get to work and try to do a little better next year.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, we appreciate the time of Rays President of Baseball Operations, Eric Neander, and the guy who was at his final news conference of the season, probably a little bit earlier than we all anticipated, was Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times, who is now back from Boston and joins us on the podcast. Mark, thanks for hanging out with us.
Anytime, Neil. See you in Boston, see you in St. Pete, wherever, man.
Yeah, and I, as I mentioned with Eric, obviously earlier than anticipated, what's your take on this season as a whole? I mean, how do you evaluate it from a reporter's perspective?
I mean, I'm going to have a little harsher view than Kevin Cash and Eric Neander and some of the players did, Neil. Yes, what they did during the regular season was tremendous, and it is something they should be proud of, and winning 100 games for the first time in franchise history and doing it in the AL East with three other 90-win teams and winning the division, all those things, and having the second best offense in the game and the best pitching staff in the American League. All those things are great, but it's a bottom line sport. And this team was determined, focused, had set a goal to get to the World Series, was in position to do so as the top seed in the American League, had home field advantage for the first two rounds, and gets knocked out on the first round by the wild card team, a team they beat by 8 games in the standings and beat 11 out of 19 times during the season. I think you've got to have a pretty big, it's also a disappointment aspect to any description of this season. I mean, Neil, I'm working on something for a couple of days from now, the Tampa Bay Times, and I'll probably solicit your opinion as I often do on these things. But, you know, where does this rank among the biggest disappointments in that regard? Is this up there with the 2010 team? Is this up there with the 2009 team not getting back to the postseason? And there's a significant level of disappointment with how this season turned out.
Is this the series where, you know, they did so well without Tyler Glasnow? If you would have told me on June 15th, or the date that that injury happened, are they even going to get in the playoffs? There might have been some question. But is this a segment of the season, the postseason, where they most miss Tyler more than anything else?
I think so, Neil. I think it is. And I think it shows up. And part of this is a bigger picture question that we talked to Eric Nander about at the press session on Tuesday at the Trop, is that, you know, they do an incredible job of building their roster out to win over 162 games. And they do that with versatile, complementary type players. They do that with an incredible amount of depth. They do that with roster shuffling, maybe, you know, even some roster manipulation to always have fresh arms and good matchups. But in a post-game series, especially a 5-game series, it sometimes comes down to your stars, or as your colleague Dave Will says, you know, your big boys have to step up and do their part. And, you know, when you don't have those stars, maybe that does work against you in this case. And having a dominating starting pitcher, a horse, a clear number one, definitely is to your advantage. I mean, last year the Rays had 3 of those guys, and Charlie Morton, Blake Snell, Tyler Glasnow. They still didn't win the World Series, but they sure got close, and I think that is part of what helps you get there.
And the margin, though, Mark, is still slim. I mean, you take a look at how close they came to a bounce here, a bounce there, a shorter or taller wall at a certain spot, and everything does change. Am I right? I mean, the last two games were walk-off fashion, 13th inning, 9th inning. So it's not like they were that far. It's not like you could say, oh, they got swept or they were routed. Those games, they had certainly had a chance. Even the 14-6 loss, they were up 5-2 after the first inning.
Right. And if you really wanted to go to a turning point, I think you might even go back to game 2 of losing that 5-2 lead and letting that game get away at home, because, you know, we saw Colin McHugh, who'd pitched so well. You had actually provided me with the stat. He'd only allowed 3 homers all year. He allowed 2 in a 7-batter span. Then Matt Whistler had a tough game that night, and that changed the tenor of game 2. I mean, the Rays hadn't lost 3 games in a row since late July. They hadn't lost 3 games in a row to the Red Sox. They lost that first series, and they lost the first game when they played them again a month or two later. So technically they lost 4 in a row to the Red Sox, but they don't lose 3 games in a row. They didn't the whole second part of the season. And then they do lose 3 games in a row. 1 when they blow a lead, 2 on walk-offs. That 13-inning game was a classic game. That's going to be a game that probably everybody but journalists and Rays fans are going to consider one of the best games in playoff history, certainly in recent playoff history. And then, you know, the tough ending on Monday night on the walk-off. And, you know, coming back from 5-0, only one bigger deficit all year, which was when they came back from a 6-run deficit at Boston on Labor Day. So they did a lot right. And you're right, they didn't get blown out. They didn't get swept. But, you know, going back to what I said at the top, this is a bottom line business. And when you come out and say, as Brandon Lowe and other players did, our singular goal this season is to get back to the World Series and win it, and you don't get past the first round, I think you have to look at it to some degree as a failure.
So from that regard, how much change do you anticipate going into 2022? And what are the top decisions and moves that the Rays are going to have to consider?
Well, as you well know, they're the Rays, so there's going to be change. And even this year, when they brought back almost the whole position player core intact, they changed the whole pitching staff. So there's always going to be change around the Rays. There's always a lot of it. They are going to have a really fascinating winter. And I'm going to call it like a Baseball America winter, because it's going to be a lot of small transactions that have to do with manipulating and controlling their 40-man roster, managing their 40-man roster. You know, some of these guys are on both lists, so I broke them up a little differently, but there's 8 players, all pitchers, that are on the 60-day injured list that have to come off and be reinstated to the 40-man roster. There's seven free agents that are going to have to come off the 40-man roster. There's 19 players who are arbitration eligible, some of whom are going to be non-tendered or traded. There's an option on Mike Zunino, which I think we all assume is going to get picked up, and that's going to be for a nice $7 million contract, which will make him one of the higher paid Rays. So there's some things that they have to do internally to figure out, you know, how many of these guys on the 60-day IL are they really going to keep around? How many of these free agents are they going to talk to? I would assume none. They'll talk to them all early, but won't sign anybody early because then you lose that roster spot you gain by taking them off. It's almost a wash between the free agents they have and the guys they have to reinstate from the 60-day IL. And then, you know, like I said, they're not going to pay all 19 guys arbitration or they'd all be making Neil Solon's money.
Right. In terms of all seriousness, you mentioned Zunino. Is that the easiest decision the Rays have to make this offseason?
I think so. And part of this is like the Rays get ripped for a lot of things, Neil, around the industry, but they try to do right by players. And, you know, when they didn't pick up Charlie Morton's option last year, they could have picked up Charlie Morton's option and traded him and gotten something for him. Sure, there's a risk if you do that. If a guy were to get hurt, you know, during the off season, were to, you know, COVID, I mean, were to fall playing with his kids and break his arm. I mean, whatever you want to say, you would assume a risk there, but it wouldn't have been much of a risk and they could have gotten something for him, but they felt that they owed Charlie, that he committed to them for 2 years and they knew he wanted to find a situation where he could live at home during the spring if possible, or live near his home here in the Bradenton area. So they wanted to do right by him. So I think the same thing with they did with Rich Hill. They knew they weren't going to keep Rich Hill. They wanted to trade him to a playoff team because he signed with them to be in the playoffs. So they got Mike Zunino to come back this year at a significant pay cut. He wanted to come back. They wanted him back. They didn't want to spend the money that they had the option for. So he came back almost like half of what he was supposed to make. So I think this is almost like a make good thing. The option was structured to go up from like $4 million to $5 million to $6 million to $7 million. Wasn't quite that round, but essentially that based on games played. And he did well enough this year, obviously, that he, you know, he surpassed the minimum. So yeah, $7 million for catch. Who might hit a lot of homers and is good defensively, but might bat 200 and strike out a bunch of times, might seem like a lot, but I think you almost look at it as that's part of what he would have made this year had they not brought him back under the reduced terms.
And if you look at market value for catchers, I mean, what James McCann is not accomplished, never has had any year really close to what Mike Zunino had this year in terms of overall value. And he got what, a 4-year, $40 million deal with the Mets the other year.
Yeah, and Travis d'Arnaud, who we saw and basically, you know, owes his resurrection to the Rays. He made himself a lot of money, but what, 2 years at $8 million each for the Rays, and he just re-upped for two more years, I think, at $8 million each for the Rays. So he made himself, what, $32 million by coming to the Rays and having that strong season he did here.
What are some other things that you anticipate they'll look at, Mark, and how much change? You know, you mentioned, yes, they're going to have change, but what – the core of young players, I would assume, is going to be very similar. You're going to have Wander Franco, Randy Arozarena, the young pitching staff is going to be the focal point of this group.
I think so. I mean, it would probably make sense to have one veteran starting pitcher type around. Maybe they bring Michael Wacha back. I mean, they really liked him and his attitude. And, you know, he was a good guy in the clubhouse. He was a good guy to kind of carry the message to some players. But somebody like that who's been there, done it. The bullpen is always as kind of fungible as the word that Andrew Friedman first introduced us all too many years ago, and none of us knew what it meant, but they like to rotate that around. They always think that the bullpen guys are the hardest to predict who's going to be good or not. I think you'll see a couple of the more familiar faces go, Neil. I mean, some of these guys are getting up there in arbitration money. I mean, G-Man Choi, maybe we have seen the last of G-Man Choi. I think the one storyline that's going to be around all winter, unless something happens and probably into the spring, are they going to trade Kevin Kiermaier? I mean, they have certainly got enough outfielders. Brett Phillips obviously has a similar skill set to Kevin Kiermaier. We saw Josh Lowe come up during the season. He is a guy that Brady Williams, the AAA manager, raves about. He can play center field as well. You know, Manuel Margot is also getting up to arbitration wise. So I almost would think one or the other is going to go, whether it's going to be Margot or Kiermaier. But, you know, I think Kiermaier with a $12 million contract for next year and then a $2.5 million buyout or a $13 million option for 23. So there's some significant money still to go there. So I think that might be one of the bigger stories. And, you know, we all know how much it means to Kevin Kiermaier to be a Tampa Bay Ray. He always says that, and that's the only place he knows. But that may be something we see happen. But I do think a couple of these position players, like I said, that are getting up there. I mean, what's Ryan Yarbrough's future? He's getting up there arbitration-wise. He'll probably be in the $4 to $5 million range. you know, if they've got enough young pitching, maybe they move Ryan Yarbrough. I'm just, you know, speculating, kind of looking at the roster as we're talking here. But I think there'll be a couple familiar names that do kind of get churned a little bit in the roster.
Well, it's certainly going to lead to a busy offseason. We certainly wish it didn't start so quickly, Mark. But we certainly appreciate you joining us on the day we all traveled back from Boston.
Anytime, Neil. It'll be fun to kind of see as this all unfolds. And there'll be some awards that may involve some Rays coming up in November, the BBWA Awards, whether Randy Arozarena's Rookie of the Year, whether Kevin Cash repeats as Manager of the Year. So we shall have plenty to talk about.
Certainly appreciate the time of Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times. Great to chat with him, and I'm sure we'll be doing it plenty during the course of the offseason on future podcasts as well. Thanks also to Eric Neander, Rays President of Baseball Operations, for being with us. And thank you so much for listening. You can follow our blog, raysradio.moblogs.com. And then we'll have podcasts periodically, probably next up, let's say the start of the World Series, kind of do maybe some predictions and some thoughts. And if anything happens newsworthy between now and then, we'll do something. But otherwise, you can check out our blog for other up-to-date information analysis as we go. Thanks so much for being with us, and we certainly will chat with you soon.